On Pilot TV this week, we are exploring marital minutiae with Matthew McFadyen and Elizabeth Banks in The Miniature Wife on Sky, revisiting a difficult friendship with Nicola Coughlan and Lydia West in The Return of Big Mood to Channel 4, and finding out what's been happening in the world of Euphoria on Sky and HBO Max as Zendaya, Sydney Sweeney and the gang return after a four-year break. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And today is a very, very exciting day. Why, you ask? Because it is Steph Day. Specifically, it is Steph Seelan's birthday. And to celebrate, she has chosen to be as far away from the three of us as humanly
very
possible.
Sensible.
Well,
yes.
you don't know that. She might just be as far away as humanly possible from you.
I mean, that's true.
And secretly, Kay and I are meeting.
We're having dinner later.
Yeah. Is that what's happening? There's actually a party tonight, isn't there? And I'm not invited.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Yes.
Wow.
No, she would never do that.
Wow.
You would always be guest of honour, James.
Thank you very much for lying to me. Kay Ribeiro, Boyd Hilton,
Hi.
You are both here. How are you celebrating Steph Day? Obviously, apart from the party that you're having without me later on.
That's primarily it. Just, you know, constantly thinking my favourite memories of Steph, the fun times we've had together.
Without me.
Yeah, without you. On Basic Binges. I'm thinking a lot about Basic Binges.
Right, okay. Did you get her a cake? Was it a creamy, fruity, spongy cake?
You leave my creamy cake out of it. No, not yet. But I plan to spend some quality time with her, and I will be buying her. As you know, she's like a sweet fiend.
Yeah.
So I will be...
A Patfowl cake.
Yeah, defo.
Okay.
What about you guys? What have you got for Steph, more importantly?
Well, I gave Steph the greatest gift of all, the gift of my friendship.
Oh, God. Oh, no, I think she wants a refund.
I've given her an even better gift, which is the gift of being able to organise our podcast recordings next week when James is away. I mean, what more could she want?
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is you've got nothing for your co-pilot.
Yeah,
basically.
I mean, basically.
Okay,
yeah.
Must
but
be
yes,
better.
That is true. Boyd is putting Steph in charge of all technical things next week when I'm off.
If you're listening to this, Steph, and I know you do listen, thank heavens for you. What a hero, and happy birthday right now.
Yes.
It doesn't feel like a gift.
Happy birthday, Steph.
Gifts come in many different shapes.
They do. They do. Good. What have you been watching, Kay?
So I've been watching three things that aren't out yet. I'm not going to say a lot about them because they will be reviewed and I don't want to get shot.
You say that, you don't know if they will be reviewed.
Yeah, maybe they won't be.
Unless you've run them past James already, our Lord and Saviour.
I'm saying it now, that if you don't review it, you're doofy.
Doofy.
Like, yeah, it would be an egregious turn of events.
Go on.
First up is The Cage, I'm going to talk about. So that's going to be on ITV. That is Tony Schumacher's new crime drama. It's set in a casino. It stars Sheridan Smith and Michael Socha.
Yeah.
Am I saying that right?
I mean, we should be asking you since you are in the pocket of Big Cage.
I am. And that's coming up soon. And all I would say is make sure you watch it.
Based on the work of
she's saying make sure you watch it because she's literally being paid to say it, so it's fine.
Oh,
it's not a spoiler.
Am I saying make sure you watch it and form an opinion of yourself, or am I saying watch it because based on the work of Tony Schumacher prior, so you know, like The Responder, etc.
Well, The Responder, he's brilliant, Tony Schumacher. He's absolutely brilliant. And I did a couple of Q&As with him for The Responder, I think. And
before you were replaced by Kate.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And but I think Sheridan Smith, we hope that Sheridan Smith's going to come into the studio.
Be in this studio.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yes. So, we will cage her in the studio.
Okay, that's weird. I think that's when ITV say, actually, she can't come in.
Yeah.
She's going to go in James's cage.
So, we can ask her how to say Michael Socha's name as well.
Yes.
I think it's Socha.
I've heard a few different versions.
There are multiple interpretations.
Yeah,
I mean, in many ways, we could ask him.
Yes.
But,
yes. I have interviewed him before, I think. Yeah, but I can't remember.
You just called him Mike.
Exactly.
Mikey.
Yeah.
Mikey, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, the other thing I want to talk about is Mint, and that's coming up on BBC. It's a romantic crime drama. It's written by and directed by Charlotte Regan, and it's set in Scotland. I don't know why I can't say any names. Now, what would you say?
I think it's Regan because it's R-E-G-A-N.
Oh, then Regan.
There's no R-E-A-G.
Yeah. You need an A for Regan.
Yes.
So I think it's Regan, yes.
Okay.
And she directed
Riddled
that film.
By self-doubt at the moment, I am with all my names. Sorry.
Yes. She directed that excellent film, didn't she? That excellent indie film, Scrapper.
Yeah, Scrapper.
And this is a TV project.
Yeah, it's set in Scotland, and it's about the three... female members of this crime family and their relationships. And it stars Emma Laird, Sam Riley, Laura Fraser and Lindsay Duncan. And it's about the daughter's potential romance with a rival crime family's son. And yes, I can't say anything
about it. Is that character played by Loyal Karner, the rap musician?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, who I once sat next to at the South Bank Show Awards. Loyal Karner. Mm. He's a highly respected...
Are these the new Braggs, people you sat next to?
It's regular Braggs, regular sat next to Braggs, award ceremonies Braggs. I've got one coming up in a minute, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, and he was an absolute delight, and he's incredibly talented, and I think this is one of his first acting jobs.
I think that came up in an interview I read. So that's Mint, that's on BBC. And then the last thing I want to tell you about is, actually, no, two things. One is Margot's Got Money Troubles on Apple TV on the 15th of April.
It's on my list as well.
Okay, I'll let Boy talk about that.
Well, except he can't, because you're going to be reviewing it next week.
I was just going to mention it.
I've watched it. It's David E. Kelly's new drama, and it stars Michelle Pfeiffer, his wife, Elle Fanning, Nicole Kidman, Nick Offerman, etc. And we will be talking about it next week. So that's all I shall say.
Ironically, I have seen that, and I will not be on next week to talk about it. I've also watched all of Criminal Record, and I won't be able to talk about that either. That's quite frustrating.
Why don't you do a voice note?
I should do a voice note, reviews of both of them.
Yeah,
so we
can just play you in and then fade you out. And then the last thing I want to talk about, because we're not reviewing it and it's this week, is... What are you laughing at?
I don't know, just... Yeah, the last thing, carry on.
The Murder Line. Which is out on the 18th of April. It's ITV1. It's a Canadian crime drama, and it stars Minnie Driver. It's she plays the matriarch of a crime family who's hunting a missing consignment of drugs, and she locks horns with Suits LA star Stephen Amell, who is a smouldering small town police officer who is trying to distance his best friend from childhood from these drugs, but suggests that maybe he's got a murky past too.
I think you are allowed to say what you think of that, because I know you were going to get around to reviewing it, and I don't think it's embargoed. So,
okay, well,
is it good? Did you recommend?
Are you compromised?
Because it was one of the possible.
No, I'm not compromised.
Okay. It was one of the possible choices for review.
I think it's enjoyable. It's not a prestige crime drama, but it's enjoyable. It's nice to see Minnie in this different role, because recently we saw her in Emily in Paris as a ditzy socialite. So it's quite fun seeing her being menacing.
Yes.
So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't know if I'll necessarily have time to watch more.
Fans of broadcast strategies will be interested to know that this is going out. It's got a really weird release pattern, this programme, this series. All five parts in 1 week, but it starts on Saturday night on ITV at 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Can't get more prime time than that. Then it ends up being at like 11 on Thursday or something like that.
What?
I was looking at the schedule for it. Yeah, I was
Saturday
like,
and Thursday.
No. And then it's on consecutive nights at random different times. So starts off.
Why are they trying to bury it?
Then it goes like 10. Then it goes back to. It's mad, honestly. And it just goes to prove. I was talking to Russell T. Davis recently, and he was saying that no one knows when and how to release things now. So they're just sometimes of the Netflix model, everything comes at the same time, unless they decide to do it in three different volumes or whatever. Or sometimes Apple is like two or three episodes first, then the rest weekly, and then back to two at the end.
But surely
or this
with
one,
this,
which is run it consecutive nights, but in randomly different times.
Surely they should go for some kind of consistency over the timings.
Well, you know, when you've got, I think they're currently airing probably I'm a Celebrity South Africa, which is means that all of the weeknight 9 p.m. slots are filled, and they for some reason decided they have to show this killing. Series was killing
the murder line,
the murder line needs to go beyond in 1 week, and we're going to show it whenever we can during that week. That seems to be what's happened. Anyway, I because I am obsessed with these things, I took notes.
No, that's an interesting addendum.
I mean, interesting ish.
Yeah, ish doing a lot of heavy lifting there.
What a diss, especially coming from him.
Such a diss, yeah, exactly.
What have you
At least
been
it wasn't
watching,
a 15-minute explanation of the latest Star Trek.
Well, funny you should say that. No, I haven't watched any Star Trek. But I have done a few things. Criminal and Margot, I have mentioned already. I have seen those, annoyingly. I watched them very far in advance, not realising I would be off. What are you going to do?
You're a man who cannot keep himself off the Apple TV screen.
A little bit,
That's a little bit.
It's very easy to use.
That's his drug of choice.
It is my drug of choice. But do you know what? And I've had a bit of a... I've disappeared down a portal rabbit hole this week, because just before Easter, almost all of the episodes of The Boys arrived in my... And I was so excited. I was like, yes, I'm going to watch this over Easter exactly as Jesus would have wanted. I'm going to watch The Boys. And very, very excited about that. Except there are two things. Now, of all the screening stuff, and to be fair, this is the privileged section. I appreciate this is going to make you seem like a terrible
also
human being.
Also possibly the boring section. I mean, you just had a go at Boyd.
I am. Yeah. So this is now my turn to bore people. So
why change the habit of life?
Right. Of all the screeners, only Disney and Amazon still do that slightly obnoxious thing where your email is in massive letters across the middle of the screen. To the best of my knowledge, it is only Disney and Amazon that do that now. Most others have found much more subtle, sort of slightly more sophisticated ways of doing
it. Also, just a little side note, in my case, my name is spelt wrong across the street.
So it's even more infuriating.
Yeah. Are there any of them that spell it correctly?
Everyone else, except for this one platform.
Wow. Yeah.
I suppose it correctly. Oh,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Karen.
So we're getting there. Yeah. Kate Ribeiro. So The Boys' screen has turned up. Not only did it have the big the big email address, but it also had hard-coded, forced subtitles.
Oh.
Now, as you know, I don't get on
that
with subtitles.
Set him off.
Yeah.
Because I can't stop my eyes from flicking down and reading them. I find it very distracting. But this wasn't just speech subtitles, it was hard-of-hearing subtitles. So it was like grunting noise, music becomes intense, you know, the ones that describes everything that's going on.
Mm.
Add that to the massive watermark, and like the entire screen was like 99% text.
Maybe you should have just closed your eyes and let the words just wash over you.
You know what? I tried. I watched maybe 8-9 minutes of it and I had to tap out. I was like, I genuinely, like, I feel like I'm getting a headache. It was words everywhere. What am I looking at? Ah! And I couldn't deal with it. So I had to stop watching it. So I have not watched all of the words. But I have, however, watched the first two episodes now because they have aired. The Boys, the final season, Boys Season 5, has aired. And it has to be said, I'm enjoying it a lot. And I'm still quite surprised how much I enjoy it because it's very crass and very crude. And there's loads and loads of toilet gags in it. And that is so not me.
So just showing that he is complete hypocrite.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
inconsistent.
Right, but that's totally not my sense of humour. And yet there is something just very charming about the show. And I really like it.
Is Holiday Granger in it somewhere?
No.
Hypocrite, thy name is James.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair. It's fair. But
I
really like it.
I have some questions about The Boys. And you said, are they all exploding still?
There are lots of explosions and there's lots of blood and bodily functions and
where does it
ejaculations
rank?
And all of those things.
I was going to say, in terms of the sex scenes, because the last time we had a train of...
Right.
Of what?
Yeah.
Rimming.
Well, that... Yes.
It's the only way to... I'm trying to think of another way of putting it.
They try and top themselves each season.
Yeah.
Now, I've only watched the first two. There has been nothing yet.
Okay.
There's been forceful lava ejaculation, but I don't think that counts.
God. Forceful lava?
Yeah, you know,
lava.
Don't ask.
As in, like, soap lava?
No, lava. As in L-A-V-A, as in molten
literally
rock.
Literally, hot mess.
Very messy hot mess.
Yes, very much so. But I am loving it, so okay. I'm looking forward to watching this. And I'm going to be watching it now, weekly, as they drop. Because I can't deal with the subtitles. So
that's
just
so
like
funny.
A regular person.
Like a regular person.
The sadness of this is the lovely publicist, I believe, of handling the show reached out and said, you know, we're giving you these screeners, it's going to be great.
Little did he know that James would then be slagging off the screeners.
Yeah, I was just like, I'm ingrate that I am.
Yeah, totally ingrate.
No, I know. Dear. No, it was lovely of them to provide them, but because
it wasn't your standard.
I remember that time when I had to go, I went into Netflix and watched the, I think, I can't remember what season it was of The Witcher, and they had the subtitles on. And I was
in office screening.
I really wanted to get up and say, please turn the subtitles off. It's so upsetting.
Yes. Not the early days of Apple TV, when it first launched, in order to watch the shows, you have this, you had to go into the Apple office, which was then in near Oxford Circus, around the back of Oxford Circus. They've since moved to...
Yeah, Hanover Square.
Yeah, Hanover Square. They've since moved to, what's it called, with all the...
Battersea Power Station. Battersea, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, and you had to go in to this building, and I mean, you were put in a small, enclosed, airless, windowless room with a security man watching you watch the thing.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Well, Netflix have done that as well. I watched, I think, season two of The Witcher that way. I watched every episode in a little room in a basement at Netflix with a guard outside.
With a guard. Oh, no, this guard was in the room.
Oh, no one was in the room.
Oh, yeah, making sure that I wasn't recording it illicitly. What, he's literally sitting there watching. It's all uncomfortable. And, of course...
Was
you
it
know,
C?
Whatever the hell it was had, like, myriad nudity. You know, I was like, oh, God. Anyway, I'll get to that later, because,
Wow. But that's not the only thing I've been watching.
No, of course not.
So, I was directed by one... Kay Ribeiro to watch the rest of the Copenhagen test.
Oh.
And I watched every single episode of the Copenhagen test to report back to you.
Oh, yes. God.
Yes. And I did
I
watch it.
I had a mind blank. I was like, which one's that?
This is the one with Simu Liu and, where he's with the brain hacking and the spy stuff.
I was more into it than you would think.
Do you know what? It's quite resoundingly 3 stars all the way through. Like, it never becomes great, but it's always pretty consistently good. And I was swept along with it. I didn't regret watching it. It's quite fun. There are moments where they kind of, again, hand wave the science a little bit. Mm. And that's fine, because it's like, but it gets to the point where we talked about this on Pilot Plus, about having consistent internal logic. It doesn't always have that. And some of the characters behave in a slightly mad way. But it's fun. It's fun as a standalone piece. But it also then, as with all these things, tees up a potentially larger story at the end, which is interesting. But
and yeah, would you want to watch that story?
I would, yeah. Like, if we get a season 2 of the Copenhagen Test, I'm going to watch it.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I think I read they have green lit sentences.
Which would be good, yeah.
How many episodes was this series?
I think it was 8. I want to say 8, yeah.
And it maintained your interest.
My interest throughout. Mm. I thought they played it quite well.
Oh, good.
And I thought Melissa Barrera's character was not what I expected her to be. So, yeah, I thought all in all, 3 stars, but fun.
Ah, very good. Warm, thanks for reporting back.
A warm three stars.
Thanks for doing your homework.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hi, Boyd.
Hi. You usually get and what have you usually cue me up.
So fine. I can cue up.
Boyd, tell me.
Instead,
there was
an awkward silence.
I'd do a drum roll, but I think it would just be bad for the microphone. So,
true, okay,
imagine a drum roll and fanfares and cheerleaders.
Stuff that's on right now, Babies. So we reviewed Babies, and it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. It gets even better, I think. I've carried on watching it up to episode 4 of 6. You can't binge watch it, because I can't. I mean, it's just so emotionally.
Well, Steph had to skip to the end.
We've had a lot of feedback from people who are thankful to Steph for being her incredible review from, you know, based on her experiences. But it is absolutely incredible. Have I said that word twice already about it?
Yeah, but just say what you see, Boyd.
Thank you. Papa Esiedu, the two of them are just so good. But I think particularly him, because it feels like he's the most normal guy you can kind of imagine. You can imagine, and he's probably the most normal, unassuming character that he's played in his career, because he's played, you know, and yet it's completely it's almost like transparent acting, where it's so naturalistic. So I think he's incredible. She's incredible as well. And that, but just the writing and the boldness. I've seen people saying, you know, nothing happens for long stretches. But Stefan Goloszewski, the writer, that is his thing of, you know, making a toasted sandwich and communicating at the same time. Somehow the making of the toasted sandwich makes it more believable and real and all of that. So
that's like with Mum and...
Yeah, all of his stuff. Going back to him and her right at the beginning of his career. And you know, he also wrote and sang the songs that are in Babies as well.
Really?
He's now directed it, because Richard Laxton directed... the original Him and Her back in the day. And Richard Laxton is now one of his exec producers on this. And I think he's passed the directorial baton, so to speak, onto Stefan, who now writes, produces, directs, and does the music, theme tune.
When's he going to act in it?
I know. I mean, I'm sure he will. Because I think he started out as an actor as well. Anyway, it's going to be one of the shows of the year. I'm telling you now, the response, people come up to me in the office, it's one of those, you know, where everyone's like, are you watching this show? And I was slightly, because it started on Easter Sunday, and I thought that was a bold, possibly even bizarre choice for like a holiday, bank holiday weekend, etc., a long weekend, an intense, you know, emotionally kind of exhausting sometimes show. But I think it's paid off, because I think it did pretty well in the ratings, and I think it's going to build. I think word of mouth is going to build, and pretty much everyone seemed a captive audience and like, oh yeah, I'm going to watch this thing, and it's incredibly moving. So, Babies. I started out by saying things are on now as if I was going to mention it in one sentence, and I've ended up rambling on and on for about 10 minutes. The capture, James and I are.
Yes,
both
captured.
We are captured.
Mm.
Enraptured and captured.
We talked about on Pilot Plus how there was a scene that was completely preposterous that should have been dealt with by someone in the penultimate episode.
Yeah.
But I'm still loving it. It's still one of the most riveting and exciting, thrilling series of the year so far. So there's that. And then, like you, Kay, I've got loads of stuff that I've had to watch in advance. So I interviewed Richard Gadd yesterday for an interview that'll go out soon for his new series, Half Man, which, talking about unusual delivery tactics, that's going on iPlayer first, weekly. So it's not all going out on iPlayer, but it is going out on iPlayer before it goes on BBC One Live, so to speak, a few days later. But it is weekly. So I found that slightly odd and weird. But that's a fascinating show, is all I'd say. And Richard Gadd was an absolute delight. And remember, I talked to him at the BAFTAs. So I'm not sure if I sat next to him at the BAFTAs, but I definitely had quite a long chat with him at the BAFTAs. I've also watched these shows for upcoming review, which are all embargoed. Beef, season 2.
Oh.
Yes, on the Netflix. Interesting. Margot's Got Money Troubles, as previously mentioned. Very interesting. And Unchosen, the religious cult drama on Netflix coming up. Also very, very, very interesting with Asa Butterfield.
Interesting being pretty much the only adjective you're allowed to use at this point.
The only one you're allowed to say. Remember we used to refer obliquely to trailers of...
Yes.
Do you remember the glorious days of that running joke?
Yes.
I might bring it back. but they're all fascinating. Yes, it's an endlessly intriguing time for television. Oh, and one more thing I wanted to mention. SNL is just going from strength to strength. I think it gets better every week. I mean, it's losing viewers to some extent, but it was always going to be like a big event. People would watch the first one, then it's going to settle down to having less viewers. But I think
I didn't
still
have that many viewers to begin with.
It's sturdy for a Saturday night on Sky One. I think you're fine. Anyway, it's really, really good now. There was a brilliant joke last week about Jesus Christ and Palestine and stuff. And I thought Riz Ahmed really threw himself into it. Sometimes, like, guest hosts, you know, in the American one, they kind of, you could almost sense the reluctance a little bit, but he played a massive variety of different characters. I thought he was really funny, and they came out with some really good sketches for him, and I really liked it, and it was great, and I'm really still really pleased that they're doing it. Hopefully, long may it continue. Okay.
Indeed.
I've now finished my segment.
You sure?
Yeah.
I want another Columbo-style, one more thing.
It's over.
I do believe, Boydie, now we're not going to be able to do this on next week's Pilot Plus because I'm not on next week's Pilot Plus. But
controversial.
You and I need to do a spoiler chat for The Capture.
Yes, we do, yeah.
We do.
Smack
100%
bits.
We need to do that. Also, you need to finish watching Paradise. By popular demand,
the
listeners are demanding a Paradise spoiler.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, I'm really behind on Paradise.
Yeah, you do. But, you know, your book is finished, Boydie.
It's handed in.
There's
a big difference between handing it in and finishing it.
Until you get the revisions back, it's finished.
Let's see what happens, Okay. I will endeavour to catch up on Paradiso.
And if that isn't enough to motivate people to subscribe to Pilot Plus, which is, lest we forget, only £3.49 per month.
Cheap.
Wow.
For which you get an extra show, occasional spoiler specials, no ads, and the regular podcast, like, it's like 18 hours early, like, it's wild. Mm. It's well worth your time. But just in case, you will recall, on last week's podcast, I essentially had therapy for my recent interview with David Chase for The Sopranos.
Yeah.
I have, as a special surprise drop, put the entire thing out, unedited, on the Pilot Plus feed.
Fuck Paradise. This is my priority. I am
on that would
it.
Be your Paradise, just watching it.
Yeah. I want to listen to this. Is there a visual version as well?
I have not put the video up, no. Perhaps down the line, but I do have the video.
I quite want to see David Chase's facial expressions as you try to come up with some questions.
Genuinely, I do have the video. HBO were good enough to film it, I think presumably as blackmail against me. But yes, I've put the audio up so people can listen to that interview in all its glory. I have to say, listening back to it, I'm not sure that how bum-clenchingly tense I was through this actually comes across.
Oh, you internalised.
Yeah, I think I always thought it would be fine.
I think Nick and I styled it out quite well.
There's two
but
of you.
I was,
if you'd have been really brave, it'd just been a one-on-one.
Oh yeah, that would have been, I would have died. But I was fairly sweaty by the end. I think it's fairly safe to say.
Oh, fair enough. It sounded horrific.
Well, if you want to listen to that in all
just
its glory.
Just look at the photo on Nick's Instagram, you'll understand everything.
I have put that photo up as the cover for that particular episode as well, of him scowling at the camera. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. So if you subscribe to Pilot Plus, then you can listen to that now. And if you don't subscribe to Pilot Plus, then you should. So then you can listen to it.
Is he, by the way, David Chase, I'm sure you didn't ask him this because it's a bit rude, but is he working on something now, new?
He was working on something recently. Yeah. He'd done a pilot, but it did not get picked up, as is my understanding of it.
Okay.
I don't think it's going ahead now. So
God,
I don't know if
he didn't want to ask him that.
Didn't ask him that, no. So I mean, maybe working on something else now, but a recent thing he worked on isn't going serious, so I don't know.
Maybe that's why he was scowling.
Yeah, maybe.
Yes, maybe. Okie dokie. Should we have a listener question?
Please, God.
Let's have a listener question. Let me find the listener question, for it is here. This listener question comes from Elliot. And Elliot says...
Elliot? Sorry.
That was troubling.
No, sorry.
Was that E.T.?
I was trying to do E.T. It came out wrong. Yeah. How do you do it? Go on, do it.
I'm not doing E.T. for you.
It wasn't bad.
Do like an ouch.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a film, but yeah, you know, it's fine.
It is a film.
A rare film reference from Kurt.
Listen, it's a classic.
One of my favourite films.
That is.
Ridiculous human being.
True story.
Yeah.
Okay. This is from Elliot, and Elliot says, question for the post bag. Oh, I should say, we have a note. We have the new email address has come into effect.
Wow.
It's true.
Give the audience what they want.
Give them what they want. You asked for it by popular demand. You can now email us at postbag@pilottvpod.com. That is postbag@pilottvpod.com. To be fair, the old one, pilottv@empiremagazine.com, goes to the same place. So if you want to keep using that, it's fine. But we have an all-new email address.
Why has that come about? Was it just you wanted to do another administrative task?
It's a thing that I just felt compelled to do.
Okay.
Do you want to know something else? Letters@pilottvpod.com also works.
Letters?
Yeah.
Wow, it's your letters.
In case people forgot postbag. But yeah. So we now have multiple things that will go to the same mailbox. This is fascinating. Yeah. Let's move on. Elliot, that was your question. I'm so sorry. No. Elliot says, after the recent discussion of the Counting Crows documentary by James, I was wondering if he's listened to Across a Wire, live from New York. It's a live album of theirs and more, with more reflective stripped-back versions of songs like Mr. Jones and Round Here, even changing the lyrics of some songs. Seems like it would be a good accompaniment to the themes of the documentary. They do that a lot with their live stuff. If you've ever seen Counting Crows live, they mix up the melodies and change them up. I saw them at Shepherd's Bush Empire in the 90s, and they did that. And it was good. Wow. Anyway, that's not the question. He said, his question is, do you have any examples of when your favourite songs have been used in TV shows and whether this was a good or a bad thing? Personally, I love when the version of Have You Seen Me Lately from the above-mentioned album was used in The Bear. That is a good moment. On the other hand, Jeff Buckley's Last Goodbye being used in the last episode of Sex Education didn't sit right with me, even though it's one of my favourite songs. Maybe sometimes great songs feel like an easy way out for shows.
What's our listener called?
This is Elliot.
I
think of loads of examples of when I think they're really good, when it really works. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Are each of these going to be one of your favourite songs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are all among my favourite songs. The Bear is one of the best things about The Bear are its needle drops.
Yes.
I think. It's absolutely.
What's the best Bear needle drop?
My favourite Bear needle drop is season 2, episode 1. I've mentioned it before, I'll mention it again. Bruce Hornsby in the Range, The Show Goes On, which is one of the, it's not only one of my favourite songs, it's one of the best songs ever. It's up there with Tiny Dancer, Elton John. I just think it's almost similar. It's got a similar kind of West Coast piano-based.
I can't think of it. I need to listen to it.
The vibe is kind of similar in a way. And it's just deployed right at the beginning to kind of show, it's like shots of Chicago, you know, in the way beautifully filmed, kind of just kind of setting the scene really, and the show goes on. It just all fits brilliantly, and I listen to that song pretty much every other day. So
because it's one of your favourite songs,
it's one of my favourite,
and it's in one of your favourite shows.
It is exactly. Then I think all classic ones. Without even, you know, sometimes you have to look up one of these questions, you know, to remember. But there's so many that just will always be in my mind, and I think in The Office, in the UK Office. The final Christmas special, the final episode, deployed Alf, Alison Moyet, known as Alf, in Yazoo, her band Yazoo, back in the 80s, and the song Only You, and it's playing in the background in the kind of disco of the Office. And then you get Back for Good as well, on top of that, another all-time classic. So you've got two of the best songs ever in the one within about 5 minutes of each other in the Office finale. And this is a really obvious one. It's probably the most prominent needle drop of, I would say, the last 5 years in television.
Okay.
No, you can't think what I'm going to say?
Well, if this were still the noughties, I'd have said it was Imogen Heap's Hide and Seek or Jeff Buckley's Hallelujah, but no, it isn't, so.
In the last 5 years, it is Running Up That Hill.
Kate Bush. Yeah, fair enough.
I seriously think that song transformed the show to some extent. I think it broadened out the base of the show. I have no scientific proof for this, apart from actually, I did see the Duffer Brothers talking about it in the build-up to the last season, because they kind of had it again in the final season. But that scene...
Do you mean broaden the fan base? What do you mean? Like
broaden its audience. Like I think people who wouldn't normally watch that show or shows like it, kind of quite fantasy-based, you know, which James is always using you as the example, mm-hmm. of people who's closed-minded.
A hater.
Yeah. Hater, apparently you hate sci-fi mm-hmm. and fantasy, but I think
hello, you look quite like
frothing at the mouth.
Copenhagen, now you put that as an example.
Did you watch it? No.
I watched the first episode and enjoyed it.
Yeah. And so I just think it is an absolute legendary use of that song, and it worked brilliantly in every way. It worked. It is actually woven into the storyline, woven into the plot.
Because it's totemic.
And it is absolutely 100% one of my favourite songs of all time. In the top 10, I think. And I love Kate Bush.
At some point, can you release your top 10?
Boyd's list. Sure. I want Boyd's top 10 songs, shows, movies.
Yeah.
Totally.
Life experiences.
I'm here for
everything.
That. Yeah, whatever you want. So... Yes, that is, I think that is the most influential and went back to number one. In fact, I think it went to number one for the first song. So I think it only got to number two when it originally came out in the 80s, Running Up That Hill. And it enlarged the fame of that song and of Kate Bush and of the show. It just, everything about it was magnificent.
The bear one you mentioned
is
the incorrect answer because... The best needle drops.
A classic retort.
Exactly. You're just wrong. Two needle drops on the bear I would mention are... They're all from season two. Season two has the best needle drops on the bear, I think. But season two, episode 10, the Pearl Jam's Animal plays when they're doing the service in the restaurant. And that I love that song. That's from Versus, second Pearl Jam album. And it's brilliant. I think that's a great example. But of course, the best one, appropriately, is from the very best episode of The Bear, also season two, which is, of course, the episode Forks.
Yeah. Mm.
And it is Love Story by Taylor Swift when Richie is driving in the car. And you know it's true. You know it's true.
So predictable. I don't know why I didn't see that coming.
I think that's fabulous. So that's a big one for me. What else would I say? There are a lot of songs that I'm obsessed with now that I wasn't necessarily when I watched the show, if that makes sense.
Yes, because that was going to be my answer.
Right.
I wasn't going to answer the question.
You were going to do your own thing, of course.
Well, no, because I couldn't really think of... Because I don't have, like, just two or three specific favourite songs of all time. I just, you know...
So you don't have a list.
I don't have a Boyd definitive list. No. So instead, I just listed a couple of songs that then got in my head and I couldn't get them out when the show was on, which was last year with Rivals and Christa Berg's Lady in Red. Just could not get that out of my head because there was this big scene with Rupert Campbell Black and Taggy and it was just like extraordinary. So that lived free in my head for quite a while. And then also, and it is bringing up Shrinking, I'm sorry for people who hate it, but... 1,000 Years, which I believe was part of the Twilight track soundtrack and is by Christina Perry. They had it in this recent season and it was so emotional and brilliant. And actually then, last night when I was Googling it, I saw there's a video of all the cast in a studio singing it and she popped by as well. And it's like, anyone who's a fan of Shrinking, check out that video. But yeah, that song as well, I thought was very... Mm. Touching.
I'm a sucker for a kind of a classical arrangement of a pop song, you know, which Bridgerton does very well.
Yeah.
But also Westworld did extremely well with those kind of piano versions of songs. But if I'm going to pick one of those, I would get one that I think you would approve of, Boydie, from The Leftovers, the piano arrangement of The Pixies' Where Is My Mind, which I think it's used a few times on that show, but the one I remember it from is the International Assassin episode from season two.
Classic.
But that's great. And it is from French pianist Maxence Cyrine.
Of course.
Yeah. Which of course you knew.
Mm.
But what we were talking about is the ones that kind of stuck with me were from the Normal People soundtrack. So Matroma by The Say, Dogwood Blossom by Fionn Regan, and Berlin by Ryex were three of them. And also there is a dance remix of Hey Now by London Grammar, which is the one that plays in the first episode when they're in the nightclub. That's a banger. Love that. What else have I got? Don't Stop Believing by The Sopranos. I mainly know that song from Glee, randomly.
Yeah.
Do you remember? Because that was the first season song that they were sang on Glee.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, and that, I want to say, did that predate the Sopranos finale? I think it did. So that's kind of how I knew that song. But I liked that when it turned up in The Sopranos, and we talked about that with David Chase during my incredibly awkward interview. two others, Fade Into You by Mazzie Star, which is in American Horror Story, but also Into Dust by Mazzie Star, which plays in Boydie, True Detective Night Country at the end of that. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Really well used that atmosphere when they're in the... Yeah, I'm not going to spoil
James,
what happens
in Night
Country.
James, you know what you should do? Because you're in this like administrative mood, you should put together a Spotify playlist of all these songs.
I should have done.
Pilot listeners.
That is actually true.
I
probably should have done
Some
that.
Some of us still use Apple Music, okay?
So, okay.
Just saying.
Boyd's got a tattoo and he's being poked.
That's it. He's in the pocket of big Apple Music. I think that's most of them. I would say the Cranberries are used quite a lot in Derry Girls.
Oh, yeah.
Zombie in the season one finale, where it transitions from, I think it's Madonna, isn't it, to Zombie in Slow Motion with the Dancing.
It's cropped up like two or three times recently as well, I think.
Has it?
I'm sure I watched something the other day that is in. Yeah, I can't remember what it was, obviously, but yeah.
And I think Dreams is the one that plays in the actual finale of the final season.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Cranberries get a lot of playtime in Derry Girls. And I think that's broadly speaking, I suppose people will be expecting me to say something West Wing related. But, you know, unless you're going to go kind of like Dire Straits from Two Cathedrals, which I'm not a massive Dire Straits fan. So I'm not going to do that. I will say I knew Ronnie Jordan's The Jackal before it was on the West Wing. So okay. I can say that.
Fair enough. I wanted to mention Beyond the Up There, I forgot. It's also used in It's a Sin, of course. It was used in It's a Sin before it was used in...
Oh, right.
Yeah, in Stranger Things. And they had to get permission from Kate Bush and everything.
Did they?
Yes.
Well, I suppose they would have done, wouldn't they?
Yes.
Did you... Because David Chase, one of the things that he enjoyed most about The Sopranos was dropping in the songs. He found... That's genuinely the part of making that show he enjoyed the most, picking the songs and dropping them in.
Yeah, I think it's a really, important, massively important thing. Mm. I think is half of the reason why I love The Bear so much is how
it's
like his music taste is exactly. So I could have reeled off six or seven other songs that were all contenders for my favourite songs of all time. He uses an Elvis Costello song. No one ever uses Elvis Costello songs. Things like that. So it's almost made by the needle drops. And there's one coming up in the Somewhere About Your Review I will mention. Just keep you on your toes.
Yes. A needle drop and a name drop. We'll get to that too.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, that was this week's listener question. If you would like to send in a question, and please do, send them in for Pilot Plus. That would be good. And for this very podcast as well. I have two little folders, one for Pilot Plus and one for the regular podcast. And I can kind of try and discern whether one is a plus question or a regular pod question. So maybe have that in your head when you send it in. But the email address is, of course, postbag@pilottvpod.com. Isn't that exciting? Kate's excited.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, I thought you were.
I'm very, very excited not to be triaging it.
Good. I'm sure you are. I don't know how this ended up back on my plate, but here we are. Okay, let's move into news. What news do you have for me?
Nobody wants this series 3. They've named some new...
On my list, carry on.
Nobody wants this.
This is the thing, James. I saw this and I was like, I don't know if we need another series, is the truth of it.
I mean, if it's better than the second one, I'm in. But I struggled through that second series.
Me too.
So
we've discussed this, haven't we? Well, anyway, they have got some new cast members named, three of which are Sarah Silverman, who's going to play a rabbi, Rabbi Eden, if you will, who is a warm, quirky teacher of an intro to Judaism class and a supportive presence for Joanne and Noah. Then also Andrew Rannells as Sebastian. So that was going to be Joanna's nemesis in conversion class. Just two of the nine names mentioned.
Will they have learned proper mic technique? Will they start using headphones? All these questions and more will be answered.
Will they be less annoying? Who knows?
Who knows? This is what there's a horror film, an A24 horror film called Undertone, which is about podcasts that kill you. There are many things about that film to love, but the thing I loved the most was they proper headphones, mic technique, like these. I believed they were podcasters. Mm. Yeah.
That's why you hate this show, isn't it? Because of its continual flying
the
in the face.
They have for actual
Mike
podcast
technique.
Production.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a disgrace.
It's shocking.
I was going to do that news story as well. And I think it's good news all around because both Andrew Rannells, who's famous for Girls, he was brilliant in Girls. Remember, he was Lena Dunham's mate.
Oh, the best mate.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And he's good at everything. And Sarah Silverman is a goddess for me. She is someone who should be in everything. And she should be doing her own. I don't know why there isn't.
She's one of your favourite actresses.
She's one of my favourite actresses. The top 10 list coming for that when I put all this together. I absolutely love her. So her coming into something like that is very good news.
It'll elevate
single-handedly, she will elevate it, Kay. I promise you now.
Fingers crossed.
She's that good. There you go.
Did you see the Peaky news?
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jamie Bell.
Yes.
Is replacing Shifty Barry Keoghan as Duke Shelby in the follow-up series to Peaky Blinders, which takes place 10 years after the film Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man, which was set during the Second World War. So this is 10 years after the war ends, and it's now Jamie Bell. I didn't see this coming. I knew that this was...
Wait, is that because Baz is busy? What's going on?
I think it probably is because he's very busy. Yeah, he's very in demand in Hollywood. And, you know, he's just done that Crime 101 film he's really good in.
It could be. I mean,
it's
I don't
a big
know
the, commitment.
Is there a big age gap between the two of them? I don't know. I genuinely don't know how old Jamie Bell is.
Well, having said that, Jamie Bell is probably at least a decade older, yeah, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, Barry Keoghan's probably around 30, early 30s. Jamie
so he does need
40s.
To skip forward 10 years.
Yeah, so it makes sense from that point of view. I've just, of course, seen Jamie Bell in Half Man.
Yes.
Richard Gere's Half Man, as previously mentioned, which I cannot possibly go into any detail of because it's in.
But it's very
bothered.
Interesting.
But it is very, very interesting. And he is so, so interesting in it. And he can do, he does, he's a Scottish, he does Scottish and it very convincingly.
Is this Bell?
Jamie Bell, yeah. Bell, yeah. The Bell. Mm. Bellman.
Crucially, not James, the Bellend.
No, exactly.
Well, but Jamie Bell gives good Jamie Bellend, as we found out in Shining Girls.
Exactly.
So I think he's actually going to be good as Duke Shelby, who is a Bellend.
Yeah.
Oh, fine. Mm. Okay.
Yeah. Right, completely. And he's a semi-Bellend in Half Man, but we'll get to that. So I think it's a good choice, is what I'm saying, bottom line. Mm. What do I know? You know, but I think it completely makes sense.
I'm not wild about the character of Duke Shelby. I think yeah. Barry Keoghan is actually, you know, he's very good. I don't think he had a lot to work with in the film. I don't think the character had a lot to him.
Well, I think I really like, to start with, he was like just a complete psychopathic idiot, right? And then he kind of... And then too quickly, I think the flaw...
He was quite inconsistent.
Yes, I didn't take part in the... if you have put that
the
out
spoiler
yet,
special. Spoiler special. I believe it is up there. You were invited.
No, I was invited. Literally, Kate, I was invited half an hour's notice. Yeah. Yeah, there was like...
James.
Not me, it's Chris. Nothing to do with me.
Okay, fine.
Chris Hewitt, master of the Empire podcast, obviously. Because it was a film, quite rightly.
Yes.
The Peaky Blinders film asked me to take part. And I was literally was like, are we doing it in an hour's time? I was like, no, okay. Busy man. Anyway, I'm sure you discuss the very problem, one of the big problems with the film is he very quickly, Barry Keoghan's character changes within about 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh. So, yes.
In what way?
In the way they start off as a complete Bellend, absolute psychopathic Bellend, killing people left, right, and centre, doesn't give a shit, and then kind of suddenly he does give a shit. Like, you know, he completely does a reverse ferret. Yeah.
He's not the most fleshed out character, no. I would say.
So that's the issue, I think, there. Yeah. But presumably, in, you know, it's great. Stephen Knight, by the way. How?
I know.
He's even busier.
I know.
He's even busier than
I
the
do
busiest
think, like,
writers.
Him and Jack Thorne yeah. having some kind of competition.
Absolutely. Mm. It's yeah, incredible. Yeah. So anyway. I wonder if he's finished the James Bond script yet. We shall see.
We shall. Yes. Jamie Bell.
Duke Thumbs Shelby. Thumbs up from me.
Yeah. Thumbs up from Boydie. And Charlie Heaton from Stranger Things is going to be in it
right.
as well.
Yeah, yeah. Who's good. Charlie Heaton was great in Industry this season.
As the journalist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was fantastic in that. So all round good casting news. As is, your ears must have pricked up when I saw this, which is Alien Earth casting news.
I did see that, yes.
Yes. Peter Dinklage, okay, of Game of Thrones fame. And just the fact that Alien Earth season 2 is gathering pace.
Yes.
From Noah Hawley, etc.
Speaking of needle drops, I can't believe we didn't think of Alien Earth. Alien Earth had spectacular needle drops at the end of every episode.
Yes, it did, didn't
and it?
It
was very kind of like 19 sort of grunge coded as well. So I think every single, and they used Animal in that as well.
Yeah.
So, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot that. Yeah. But they used a ton of stuff. I really, really loved all of the songs.
I had issues with the last segment of Alien Earth, but I still thought it was brilliant.
Without spoilers.
We went through this a lot. Don't you remember? Because I didn't like the fact that the alien was suddenly in broad daylight.
Spoilers. Oh, I suppose you can say that. It's fine. Yeah, I'll allow it.
Thank you. Yeah, I said it all the time.
Yes, you did. You didn't like it. It's like the alien was in corridors, the combination of corridors and aliens.
No, corridors was okay. Darkly lit corridors where the alien should be.
So
it's when
hang
he's
on.
In broad sunlight in the day, in the middle of this fucking... Mm. That's why I didn't like it.
So your complaint was there weren't enough corridors.
Yeah, in a
Jesus
way.
Christ.
They weren't dark enough.
I'll give you my top 10 list of
movie corridors.
Oh God!
Yeah, no, but generally all round it was pretty great. It was I did really enjoy it.
Yeah, with great needle drops.
With great needle.
Some of my favourite songs.
Exactly. That could be in the day of my memoir. Some of my favourite songs. Just
got a full Partridge.
Yeah.
Himesh Patel is going to be in the X-Files reboot, which is interesting.
That's good news. Yeah.
But crucially, though, he is going to be teaming up with Danielle Deadwyler. So it's a kind of station. What's it? Was it Station 11?
Yeah.
Station 11 reunion.
Yeah, that is good. That is interesting, yeah.
Station 11, a show that I watched, I think, all but the last two episodes of and never finished.
I don't think I finished it either.
Yeah. And it got everyone, it was like everyone's show of the year, it's amazing. Mm. It's quite slow.
It was quite slow. Whisper it now.
I'm sorry. I never made it to the
intentionally
voice.
Intentionally slow and creepy. Yeah.
James's decrepit old voice.
Thanks. Anything else in the world of news?
It was news. This is news to me that this was happening. But it is, and it's another casting thing. All of these stories tend to be casting things. But Sarah Paulson, to no one's great surprise, is going to be in Ryan Murphy's next series. And Ryan Murphy has now got to the point. So he's doing American Horror Story season 13, which I did not know was happening.
13.
And that's, by the way, in between all the other shows, like The Beauty, which has a great needle drop in it, assailing Christopher Cross. I'll get to him later. But, yeah, they're doing American Horror Story 13, which is going to be some kind of sequel to the Coven season of American Horror Story, which was one of the best seasons. And it's called The Supreme Rises, which made me laugh because I thought it was Supreme. I'm wearing a Supreme jumper right now.
You are.
But the cast for this latest season is like a Ryan Murphy reunion of every actor
his
he's ever worked
people.
With constantly. So,
spoiler, is Sarah Paulson in it?
Sarah Paulson is the headline story. She's the headline story. Joining Jessica Lange. Okay, so everyone, Evan Peters, who was in The Beauty, and I interviewed him for that, and I made the point that his whole career could be just being in Ryan Murphy shows because he's in so many of them.
Sure, he liked that.
Yeah, he didn't mind, kind of, maybe. Who can tell? Angela Bassett, Kathy Bates, Emma Roberts, Billy Lord, Leslie Grossman, etc. And this is quite exciting. Mm. Ariana Grande. He always loves a bit of stunt casting.
Yeah.
And Ariana Grande, who's been in, she was in Scream Queens. Remember Scream Queens? I think it was a one season wonder that he did. She was in that, but this is her first big acting thing, I think, for quite a while. Fans of hers will probably.
Series 13, unlucky for some, not for Ryan Murphy's bank balance.
Exactly.
and those cast members.
For sure. So anyway, it's on its way. And Ryan Murphy's is even busier than Stephen Knight and others. So, yeah.
Jack Thorne. I've got some Mindy Kaling news. So, Disney have announced that on the 2nd of June, her new series will be landing. It is called Not Suitable for Work. And it's apparently about five work-obsessed 20-somethings striving for professional success and, if they have time, personal happiness in Manhattan's most glamorous neighbourhood, Murray Hill.
NSFW.
Mm. So you'll be watching on the Northern Line.
Yeah.
And it will star Ella Hunt, Avantika, Will Angus, Jack Martin, Nicholas DeVornay, and Jay Ellis, and many, many more that I'm not going to read. So yeah, that's exciting. Everyone loves a bit of Mindy Kaling.
Okay, that is it for news, and let's move on to this week's reviews. And first up this week, we have, well, it's a euphoric day, because after a four-year absence, Sam Levinson's Euphoria is back on Sky and HBO Max. 4 years in the real world, of course, but 5 years in the universe of Euphoria. And, of course, that means it is no longer a high school show. This isn't 21 Jump Street. None of them can pass as teenagers. So Rue and Nate and Jules and Cassie and co are all now out in the big, wide world. It's not going entirely to plan, I think it's fairly safe to say. Boydie, how euphoric were you that this is finally back?
Well, I was very excited, actually, that it was finally back, because I'm a big Euphoria fan, as I'm sure listeners, if not you, James, will remember.
No, I don't remember, but yes, I believe
there's no
you.
Reason why you should keep tabs on.
It's one of your favourite shows.
Provide us with your list, Boyd, how are we meant to
Well, know? It was would have been in my list for top shows of the year when they came out, I think. I loved Euphoria. I thought it was, you know, when it started, it was like the most extreme, wild, daring, dare I say it, bold of all teen dramas. It made Skins look like something I've seen. CBeebies, basically. rampant drug use. Obviously, Zendaya's playing a kind of drug addict slash dealer in a way. And then, you know, its attitude towards sexuality and gender and sex itself was extraordinary. And it just felt very much of the moment, you know, kind of very up to date in terms of like how young people in America particularly conduct themselves and what you can and can't say, and that whole language of talking about of people's individuality and labeling people and all of that. It just felt, you know, absolutely on the button, and it had this incredible cast. And it was kind of Sam Levinson directed it brilliantly, like a very showy director. I remember season two, episode one started with this extraordinary tracking shot, and it had this kind of moment of extreme violence. He loves his violence, his gore, his bloodletting, all of that. As much as he does, nearly as much as he does, rampant nudity throughout the whole thing. Do you remember in season one, there was the scene where Jacob Elordi's character went into the dressing room and there was like about 30 penises.
That's what
oh my God, yes. Yeah.
This is what Cock-a-palooza. I remember.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I remember.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, penis-a-loser. Dickalopalooza. Whatever. Anyway, it was so all of these things, right? All of these things made it really special. It was very focused. It was very, very well written, I thought. It kind of it was compelling, gripping. It was like mixed thriller with again with teen drama and romance, and there were kind of like interesting threads, like the Jacob Elordi's dad being secretly gay and having this, well, not relationship, but it was just...
That was the late, great Eric Dane, wasn't it?
Eric Dane tragically died earlier this year.
Yeah.
And he was back in the show. It's really moving, actually, that he... Because you can tell there's something not quite right with him in the show. And yeah, he passed away, sadly, recently. So anyway, this is all by way of saying I loved Euphoria, both seasons one and two. This is a fucking disaster.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry.
I was not expecting you to go
oh
there.
Oh my God. It's like, I remember the build up to this show, I think about, I would say about 6 to 9 months to a year ago, maybe a year ago, the stories went around in the kind of showbiz press, like Variety, and I reported that in the show that it was having trouble getting everyone together. Because now, of course, Jacob Elordi, Sydney Sweeney, Zendaya are massive stars, right? They're among the biggest, most sought after film actors in the world right now. And they're all back in the show. But there was the story went round that everyone was having trouble with the scripts, that Sam Levinson couldn't get all the stuff together. There was a bit of a shambles. And there was at one point, there was even rumours they were going to cancel this season entirely and just not go ahead with it because it was proving difficult.
Because they had the strike, they had everything. Like, yeah. There were so many problems going on.
Loads of problems to deal with, et cetera. Creative and, you know, kind of planning for planning reasons. Anyway, this is such a mess. And it's so sad. I'm really crushingly disappointed by it because it's difficult, you know, when you've got a high school show, as this was, about, you know, teens and students, you've got, the precinct is there, it's a natural area to which to set the show, the school. And then, you know, there'll be lots of stuff in and out of the school and in the, you know, they'd be going to events and parties and things like that, but you just felt grounded and focused on a tight-knit group of characters who are all at the same school and they're all doing things related to that school, like putting on the school play was one of the Maud Apatow's characters did that, they handled that really well. Now they've all left. What you've got is a kind of unfocused melange of characters who don't seem to have any of the things that drove them in the first two series happening to them anymore. You know, Zendaya's working in a strip club. Of course she is. And oh my God, one of my big tropes that annoys me in male-driven or TV dramas created by men with a very male gaze, and this, bloody hell, this has a male gaze, is season three. I mean, season one and two, you could discuss it because there was probably as much male nudity as there was female with the aforementioned penis test in that shot. This time around, half the cast are young women who are spending almost all their time in this show with hardly any clothes on, if any clothes on. And that includes Sydney Sweeney's character, etc. There's a lot of shots of all of these women, states of undress, close-ups of their bodily parts, etc., which I found really uncomfortable. They're really taking to a new level, partly because half of it is set in a strip club where Zendaya's character works. And it's such a cliche for me. It's such a old trope to have scenes set in strip clubs. I just find the whole thing... And this has taken it to a whole new level because half the whole fucking show is set in a strip club. So that annoyed me. Sydney Sweeney and Jacob Elordi's characters are engaged to be married. He's got a massive... They're living in this ludicrous house, unbelievably massive, like, mansion. She's doing OnlyFans... And he's kind of annoyed by that. It's trying to be very current, you know, certainly particularly with the OnlyFans thing. But I've now got three, I think, at least shows where we've got OnlyFans-related storylines coming up, one of which you mentioned already. And so that does... on one level, it's like, oh, yeah, you're dealing with something very current and new, but actually everyone's kind of dealing with that all together already. And what are you saying about it? Nothing particularly interesting. It's just, I cannot exaggerate how much of the extent to which it's a mess. It's just rambling. Scenes go on too long. It opens
Why do you think this has happened?
I think this has happened. It opens with this long journey of Zendaya's character in this beaten up old car. And there's an extended bit where she drives up this ramp to go over a barrier. I think it's the US-Mexican border, maybe,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, it's basically Trump's wall.
It's Trump's wall. And all right, you're saying something about Trump's wall. I don't know what you're saying. You're saying something. And she's driving along. this is the best thing about it is the needle drop of Christopher Cross's Ride Like the Wind, which is brilliant. Apart from that, and she, it takes like 10 minutes for her to negotiate this thing. And it's like, already, we get the point. It's nicely shot. She's great, but it's just irrelevant. It just doesn't need to be there. It doesn't need to go on that long. And every subsequently, almost every single scene, I've watched the first three episodes, by the way, which is what they've sent out to critics. Everything goes on too long. Every storyline is forced. You don't believe a word of it for a second. One of the great things about the first two seasons, even though it's dealing with quite extreme behaviour and people going through extremes of drug abuse and sexuality, etc., and people were being, blackmailed. There was like porn blackmail and all of that. It felt weirdly felt very grounded and focused. That's one of the best things about it. This is all over the place. It's the most unfocused, non-grounded thing I've seen in ages, and it's like. Sam Levinson, the creator, writer, producer, director, he's got too much power. He can do what he likes, and he is doing what he likes, but it's just an absolute gigantic mess. And I'm almost speechless. I know it's my job to come up with the right words, but yeah, I found it really annoying and irritating and unbelievable.
There's nothing worse than Boyd's disappointment.
Yeah, they've disappointed Boyd.
Mm. Yeah.
It's difficult for me because I don't watch Euphoria. I've seen some of the, I saw at least one of the specials. I saw, I think, the first couple from season one and
we must
at least
have
one or two.
It.
Yeah, we did. We reviewed season two as well, I think. And it's always been incredibly bold in what it set out to do. And it's a very impressive show. This, I think, maybe didn't jar with me as much because I haven't been following it all the way through. Mm. But it did feel very unfocused. Mm. And it felt, I wasn't quite sure where it was going. But I think Zendaya is so charismatic in that role as Rue, and she inhabits it so naturally that she's very watchable. So that first episode in particular, which is a slightly is not even the word, it's a very rambling exploration of what she's doing and where her life is at. And it doesn't really go anywhere. But I kind of went with it just based on vibe. Mm. Because I think she's very good in that, and just seeing how her life has kind of inevitably turned out the way it has.
She is the absolute reason. She's brilliant. Yeah. And I agree. The starting scene was, I was probably going on too long and everything, going over the barrier. But yeah, you're right. She's incredibly watchable and she's great, etc.
The Elordie and Sweeney storyline, I had no time for at all.
No. No, it's just, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely none. But
and that where that goes is just, it's both kind of grotesque and just ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah, there are still some shocking moments in this. There's a lot involving drug muling. There's a whole scene involving that, including a dog, which I won't even get into, which is just somewhat upsetting.
No harm comes to the dog.
The dog is fine.
There's a lot of animal. There's a pig section, yeah, which is...
Pig
which is
section?
Grim. Yeah. Sorry, yeah, there's a lot. It's too much. This you could almost subtitle this as, Euphoria, it's a lot. And not in a good way. It's thrown it all in. Carry on, sorry. How many did you watch? Just the first
just
one. You
can get beyond the first one. Yeah. But I thought you get Adewale Akinnuoye Agbaje is in the first one as well. And obviously he'll be in more of it too. As Rue's new employer. But that's... that was an odd way to end the episode. I'm not going to ruin it, but the way it chooses to end it, it's quite tense, it's quite stressful, but I also feel like I've seen that so many times before.
Yeah.
It seemed like an odd device to close out that first episode with.
I mean, there's so many things you've seen before.
Don't start Boyd off again. Look, he looks so sad.
He's so disappointed.
Do you know what, though? This is the thing about I absolutely am going to watch the rest. I will watch the rest in the hope it picks up.
At this point, it feels like self-harm, Boyd.
Verging on it. But I'm fascinated to see. There's an element of it because there's a thread which is like showbiz agents and actors and directors kind of being problematic. And you think this is a semi-autobiographical thing from Sam Levinson. He's a controversial figure and, he's a lot of people think he's an idiot. But... that's unfair. I think he did a brilliant job in the first two seasons, but it's just all gone to hell in this one so far. After three episodes, that's all I can.
Keep us posted, though.
Yeah,
Boydie is not impressed.
I'm annoyed that you. We should say that you haven't opted out of reviewing it. You didn't get
screeners
in time. So yeah,
lazy.
Fascinated. to know what you thought of it. Yeah. But yeah, it's a fascinating failure, really. It's
a fascinating failure. Wow.
I think it is. It's a really interesting story, I think, yeah. Because it is, yeah, because it's a really interesting
show. So you would have preferred for there to be no third series than this?
No, I wouldn't say that, because it's so on one level, there are so many things wrong with it that it's fascinating. Yeah. It's extraordinary. It's like, you know, if Martin Scorsese or Paul Thomas Anderson or one of those brilliant directors, who clearly Sam Levinson is influenced by the way, it's got all of the Brian De Palma, all the kind of classic, you know, American film directors that he's influenced by. So it's if, you know, if any of them came up with something this shambolic, it's actually fascinating. So on one level, you know, yeah, it's so extraordinary that it's worth seeing, just to kind of decide what you think about it. Anyway. Yeah. I could talk about it all day.
Yeah.
See, rather that, so I'd much rather exist it in its mad form than be boring and, you know, not unambitious and, you know, it's none of that. It's not that. It's just, yeah, it's just.
It feels honest. Like it's a show that if they had been able to end it on their own terms shortly after the second season, they probably could have done.
Maybe.
But time had passed, and it feels like now they felt they kind of could do another season rather than they should or needed to do another season to finish the story.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
There is an element of that, yeah. Yeah. But also, I think he's just drunk on his own kind of, like, power and freedom, Sam, to right. do what the hell he
well,
wants
Well, he's
to
provoked
do.
The ire of the Boyd there, so...
I'm not angry, you. I'm just disappointed.
Oh, no, that's the worst.
Euphoria, then, which is available on...
This is on Sky Atlantic and now from today.
Sky Monday. Atlantic, now, and HBO Max.
And HBO Max, yes.
Wow, you can watch it anywhere.
It's one of those, yeah.
They really want you to watch it.
Yeah. You have many, many options. Next up, we have The Miniature Wife on Sky Atlantic, based on Manuel González's short story, and this sees Matthew McFadyen as a narcissistic scientist whose penchant for miniaturization takes a turn for the toxic when he uses it to keep his wife, played by Elizabeth Banks, from leaving, reducing her to about 6 inches tall. Kind of honey, I shrunk. Well, you, essentially. This has been described as the War of the Roses meets Ant-Man. Okay, would you say... obviously Ant-Man fan that you are, but this is an accurate assessment.
I'm guessing so, yeah. I mean, as you say, Matthew McFadyen is this kind of self-obsessed scientist who creates this gizmo that can reduce things in size. And it's primarily he's doing it to, agriculture biotech or something like some. I mean, it's one of those things where you have to just not think about it too deeply, just accept that you've got this machine that will shrink things.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I would say, I don't think he does it intentionally. He doesn't intentionally reduce his wife. It's an accident. That's the whole thing you have to buy into.
Is it?
It starts off being an. I think it starts
is
off being.
Is it?
I think it starts off being
I
an accident.
I don't think it is. I think, yeah, we can't really spoil this. Let's just say it happens. I would question whether it's an accident. I think there's an element of.
All right, fine. Well, this...
impulse, let's say.
What James is...
I actually can't remember. I watched this so long ago, and now you come to mention it, I can't remember whether it's deliberate or not.
Nudging something, and then maybe it's intentional.
Yeah, I was with you. I think I came away with it. I'm absolutely certain it's deliberate.
Okay, but fine. I think it's an impulse. I think it's just like, oh, like it's just
yes,
done.
I think
because
actually,
he has a.
Right.
Yeah, well, we won't spoil it if people haven't seen it. Let's
it doesn't
just say,
really matter. At this stage,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, she's shrunk.
Yeah, she's small.
She's small. She's little. And the whole thing is that we kind of. It's a way of exploring their relationship but prior to this, obviously there's the requisite flashback, and then we see the dynamics, which are very toxic. It's a dysfunctional relationship. They're constantly at each other's throats, and he's seeing it as a kind of last chance saloon, that if this can work and he can get investment, then they'll get loads of money, they can go away, maybe they can salvage this this relationship, the marriage, but as we've just said, it goes badly because he shrinks her. And you know, what I think it does a good job of is painting a picture of this awful marriage, and the fact that he is like a narcissist and emotionally unavailable, and he prioritises his career and his happiness over hers. The arguing and the bickering is a lot. I would say that it reaches a crescendo, and, you know, you kind of want to shrink yourself. So, but, you know, I think, you know, it's doing... I liked what... I. it's enjoyable. I mean, she is feeling shrunken in her life and reduced by him. Then she gets physically reduced. I can see what they're doing there.
Metaphors.
Yeah, exactly. he's leaving no room for her. And soon, there's like plenty of room because she is miniature. So my whole thing is, and also it does pose that eternal question that I'm sure you guys, you know, does size really matter, right? which it will answer in time. But while I enjoyed the first episode and I think Banks and McFadyen have great chemistry, even if they are squabbling nonstop, is, okay, we get it. She shrunk now. It's going to be like, how do they rectify that? How do they get on? And the funny, you know, situations that will arise from that. I get it. But this is, I believe, 10 episodes.
Yeah. Right? Talk about something that needs shrinking.
It's like, yeah. So this first episode, yeah, it's enjoyable. I got to the end of it. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, great. Maybe the second episode I can get, because then I'll be like, okay, what happens? Another 8 after that? No, I just, this is stretched too far. I mean, as you say, it started off as a short story. Short, small. They have not shrunk the story. They've elongated it way too long. And so I honestly, like, I love the actors and it's kind of a funny premise, but it's not enough to sustain, you know, me watching it anymore, but also the length of time it's been given.
Kate is out.
I'm out.
Boydie.
Honestly, the disease of extended seasons of shows like this is getting out of hand. This is at best 4 parts. I'm sorry, maybe 5.
It's a 90-minute film is what it is.
It's a 90-minute film indeed, yeah.
Yeah, I think James is right.
I watched a show the other night that was full, had so much story and carriage in it, 45-minute episodes, brilliant, perfect. 10, oh, God.
10, Boyd.
This thing is insane, whoever decided it should be 10 episodes. They should be fired. Take that back. I don't want anyone fired, but, you know, it's like...
I think that's Jennifer Ames and Steve Turner.
Oh, my God. But someone who was it made for...
Are they half how
45?
Long the episode? Yeah, I think the first episode was... I want to say about 38 minutes. Best part of 40 minutes, yeah.
Some of them hit 45, believe me. I was queued up. There's just... It's a one joke.
Yes.
One note idea, which is explained in the title. And everyone's fine. Actually, well, having said that, I blame the directors, but Matthew McFadyen's working at too high a register for me. I was going on about registers in
Big mistakes. Very sensitive to
sorry,
it at the moment.
I am a bit... for some reason. But funnily enough, because she shrunk down, of course, she has to shout, you know, literally to get attention.
Yeah.
And he shouts back. So there's a lot of shouting at each other.
But even when she's full size, though, they're at each other's throats.
I was going to say, he also shouts too much in the lab at the kind of highly stylized, rather unbelievable scientists he's working with. And as are the investors who are also kind of ridiculous and unbelievable and heightened. So there's a whole... Jack James is already...
My silly alarm went off very early on with this one.
No, I'm with you in this case.
But the whole concept is silly, right? So you just...
But you can execute a fantastic or even silly concept, but you can do it seriously or seriously within certain bounds.
Grounded.
There's a version of this story that would be 10 times better if it was just it's an absurd premise, so do it realistically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was so frustrated. That's what I expected, I have to say, before I'd watched the second of it. I hadn't seen any trailer. I think, Matthew McFadyen, you know, it's going to be, it's a fun, interesting idea, the incredible shrinking woman, the classic films in like the 50s and 60s, and they were all, you know, giant cats, you know, the cat attacking the poor, you know, six-inch-high person. All of that is, like, intrinsically should be fun or interesting or whatever. But because you've got the concept, and then you've decided that the tone of this thing should be extreme and over-the-top as well, it just doesn't work fundamentally.
No, you don't need it.
You don't give a shit about anything that happens.
Maybe we're in our absurd, over-the-top era. Maybe that's what's happening.
Maybe, but I'm with you. I think pick one. Like, take a mundane situation, make it absurd. That's funny. Take a ridiculous situation and treat it seriously. That's also funny.
Yeah.
But taking something absurd and making it more absurd. It's exhausting.
It's exhausting
and it's insufferable.
Two exhausting shows in a week. Go on.
It's exhausting, and because of the length, it's a marathon.
Yeah.
But I keep coming back to that. That is like, I really want to know, like, what what did they think? It's a short story. It's not even adapted from a novel. The clue is in that. There's the clue. When you adapt something from a short story, there's a very simple idea you can explain in one sentence and you'd end up making 10 episodes of TV about it. Mm. Something has gone horribly wrong. So it's just a massive misfire for me.
But even,
and I have no interest in watching one more second of it.
No, neither do I.
Me too.
I barely got through this first episode because I thought the characters are, both of them, detestable. I hate spending time with them. They're deeply, deeply irritating.
Yeah.
All of the other characters are basically caricatures. They're massively heightened, completely unbelievable, and also very irritating.
I tell you, also, steals you know, the show. Sorry.
Also, sorry, last thing. I know this is probably a silly thing to say, but because in that first moment, you know she shrunk, so you're just working towards this point. So, yeah, do you know what I mean?
I mean, that's
so it's
the
like
other thing.
Irritating.
Oh, thank
almost.
You for my... I knew that there's something else I wanted to say. Two more things I wanted to say. One is, on that point, this is the ultimate example of a show that does not need to start with the thing starting it in the middle and then flashing back. Because
we know what's going to happen.
The title,
it's in the title.
It's in the title. So just do it. Just build up to it chronologically. It would have been much better, more interesting. How we get to that point. Just
also, the cold open where we start with her small and then it goes back to however many weeks earlier. I'm doing it. The compositing is shocking.
Oh my God,
yeah,
no, I know.
Right. James, you are right.
I meant to say that as well, sorry. The effects are just...
Oh, they look terrible.
The whole thing rests on the visual effects and they're terrible.
They're awful. They're just awful.
Is it just me?
Even I, and I never pick up on that.
Also, to the point where I also possibly thought it was unfinished. Who knows? You know, the screen, is there a note saying... But no, I don't think there are. I think this is...
No, I think that's just the show.
Anyway, the final thing is Sean Clifford steals. She's good as her agent.
Yeah.
She's funny. Yeah. She has some funny moments. And I would rather have seen an entire series about her and her job as a book
not
agent.
Not enough to warrant 10 episodes.
No. But she came out of it, fine.
But even Oti Fagbenley, who plays her sort of like boyfriend, it, again, just so heightened and so annoying.
Yeah.
I really kind of hated every minute of this.
Which is so shocking to me because it's Matthew Mathadian, right?
And it's really... Yeah.
I should love this.
And yet...
I'm sure it was fun to make. Well, I'm not sure, but I'm guessing it was fun to make. You know, they're both really talented.
That's the poster quote, isn't it? I'm sure it was fun to make. Boyd Hilton.
Not fun to watch.
Yes, fun to make, not fun to watch. Miniature Wife, then, which is on Sky and Now.
Now, I believe.
Yes. Now.
We couldn't review it last week because it was embargoed. Yes. Now we know why.
Yeah, it is on Sky Now and now. Great. Finally this week, we have the return of Big Mood on Channel 4, which is Camellia Whitehill's show. And you will recall at the end of season one, or you may not if you didn't watch it, but if you did, you will know that Maggie and Eddie's friendship imploded with a complete no-contact break. This is, of course, Nicola Coughlan, who played Maggie, who has bipolar disorder, and Lydia West, who plays Eddie, and they've been friends forever, except now they are not. And having not seen each other for an extended period, the two find themselves under bridesmaids, if you will, at the wedding from hell. Nicola Coughlan described the vibe for Series 2 as indie sleaze.
Mm.
So we turn now to Pilot TV's sleaze expert, Boyd Hilton.
God, Kay laughing too much at that.
Really made me laugh, sorry. James been on quite good form recently.
By the way, we had a lot of people talking about the poem.
Oh, the poem. The poem was excellent.
Yeah, this morning someone showed me Ren Namus was like, oh my God, the poem. I was like, yeah.
I give him credit for that.
Oh, yeah.
To even be asked to do it.
Yeah. Oh, that's a weird discovery. I don't know what Nicola Coughlan means by that, really. But
indie sleaze.
Indie sleaze, yeah. I mean, indie I get, but it's all that.
It's a vibe, boy. Just
so we say, the first series of this was critically acclaimed. I think it was Channel 4's biggest comedy since Derry Girls, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't it win like a Best Comedy Award the year that it came out?
I think so, yeah. Didn't you host the thing for this? Am I right? No?
Nope.
Oh. Oh, okay. I was going to go to you.
A rare instance where Kay didn't steal that one from you.
Yeah.
Sorry, just taking a
seat. Carry on. Can I get you something to eat? Do you need a burger?
I'm a bit hungry.
Are you hungry?
Yeah, I am. I think you're right. It was critically acclaimed. And I think, I remember the first series really being impressed by how it does mix comedy and drama and emotion. And I think it's one of the most successful attempts at doing that. So, you know, a lot of comedies these days, we sound like an old twat, are neither out-and-out silly sitcom style, which of course is James's favourite, or kind of like more, what's your favourite show? The Apple Show, the Harrison Ford Apple
Shrinking.
Show. Shrinking, which is like character-based, you know, kind of believable, real characters saying funny stuff, right?
Yeah. They're filming
With heart, yeah, definitely. And dealing with a lot of stuff, serious stuff. So there's people with, you know, Parkinson's, there's people going through bereavement, etc. Those things. And this this does that very well as well. And I think actually it mixes both. So I think there are some moments where, for example, the character of Ryan, Luke Featherston, who steals the show, he gets all the funny lines, right? He's their best gay mate. He is intrinsically funny and has great timing, and he's given lots of pop culture references. There's a reference to Heat, by the way.
In
episode one, which is like... I'll say the line, actually. What is the line? The line is... So they're basically being lectured by the wedding organiser.
Flopsy.
Oh, yeah. She's the brilliant name Flopsy. She is the sort of maid of honour from hell.
Yeah.
She's hilarious. She's very funny. And she's explaining Marina that the bride did a pre-marital juice cleanse and the night, to which Nicola Coughlin's character says, "I will never forgive Heat magazine for what it did to us." And I thought that was quite... And I think it's fine. I think it's a funny reference to Heat magazine. But there's loads of pop culture references like that throughout the whole thing, but handled in a very skillful way, I think, because people do trade in, converse in that way with, you know, maybe not as... To the witty level this has. It's a slightly heightened dialogue. But I think overall, the balance between the comedy, the one-liners, the believable stuff, and the bottom line emotional undercurrent of the whole thing, which is a really interesting question about, can two best friends deal with the fact that one of them has absolute diagnosed mental health issues, which inevitably put a strain on said friendship? And does the other person in that friendship, do they have a right, if you like, not so much morally, but as a friend, to kind of abandon them if it gets too much for them? Do you know what I mean? I think that seems that dilemma, if you like, that fundamental kind of decision by the key characters is fascinating to watch unfold. And I think it's a genuinely kind of... because they haven't seen each other. As this season starts, they haven't seen each other for ages, and they're kind of estranged from each other. And it's how they deal with that that forms the emotional undercurrent of the whole thing. And it's quite funny as well. It's played for laughs at the same time. And I think it's all down to the writing and your two leads, both of which are really good. I think the dialogue is excellent and believable and funny when it needs to be funny. I think both Nicola Coughlin and Lydia West, who, by the way, first started in Russell T. Davies's Years and Years, that was her first big role. She's brilliant. They're both fantastic, completely authentic, believable, real, naturalistic performances, and they're dealing with some really good, interesting... So I think it's a really good show.
I thought the first episode, I only watched the first one. I think it opens with a double bill, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's really funny. I think, agree with everything you say. I think also from the point of view of the observations about a middle class wedding in their 30s, like, and how that all pans out, but also the fact that Nicola's character has been reduced to being a junior bridesmaid.
Yeah, yeah.
and her, you know, feeling of hurt about that, because she considers herself to be in her stable girl era. She's managing her meds and she's feeling good. And also she's on tenterhooks because she's waiting to see if Eddie will turn up, and she does. And so it's that awkwardness and pain of their estrangement and how they're going to get past that if they can at all. But I think what Camilla Whitehill does so well is this sort of excavating and exploring of, you know, a female friendship and the difficult conversations that go unsaid and the resentments that can build, irrespective of the mental health issues, that can go unsaid and that can build over time, and when there's a codependency and when one, you know, is in a different place to the other and decides to break free, inverted commas, and seek independence / put in some boundaries, and how hard that is. And I think she does it really, really well. And also I've heard from people who watch it who have experienced, you know, like either bipolar or mental health issues, that also she, you know, she does that in a very authentic, real way. It's very, but with edgy humour. I really enjoyed it. I think it's great.
It's really well written, like really, really well written. And I think that comes across in each scene. Like it is, it took me a while to get back into the tone of it, because it's sometimes it verges onto the heightened side, which isn't always for me. But actually with this, because the writing's so good, you kind of go with it. The character of Flopsy was a lot, but also genuinely funny. Also the best name ever.
Yeah.
And there's that whole thing about a Surrey wedding, and it's just...
Yeah. This is what I'm saying, isn't it? The observations of, like, you know, all these sort of Surrey middle-class weddings that happened in the 30s and the expectations and,
I find this fascinating, though, because Camilla Whitehill, who... wrote this, created this, is Nicola Coughlan's best friend. And she has written a sitcom about a toxic friendship with Nicola Coughlan. I'm like, should we be reading into this? Like, what is this? But it, yeah, it's a really well-written, really well-realized show. It's very good indeed. And Rupert Everett is in this season, this second season.
Is he?
Yes,
he's not in the first episode.
He's not in the first episode,
okay. I mean, that's a good thing. Rupert Everett being in your series can only be a good thing.
Indeed.
I forgot that they were best friends. That's right, yeah. Remember going to a screen? Did I even? I might have even hosted a screen for season one.
But, that's hilarious if you did.
Yeah, I may have done. But I might have just attended it. But yeah, that's, I remember distinctly that the creator was very funny. She's very funny as well.
As you can
IRL.
Tell from this, yeah.
Big Mood, Series 2 then, which lands on Channel 4 when, Boydie?
Thursday, the 16th of April, 10 p.m. 2026.
Magnificent. And what else is out this week?
Well, there is, you will be delighted to know, Channel 5. It's got a new thriller. And this one actually has got, I would say, a very interesting cast because Joanna Scanlon's in it, as is, and it's written by Sally Abbott, who's a good writer, and Paul Matthew Thompson's in it from Ridley. And it's called Miss Girl, and it starts today, Monday, and it runs all across the week at 9 o'clock. At the same time, unlike the killing thing, the murder.
Yeah, it's at a consistent time each day and not just randomly on whenever they could fit it in.
Exactly.
Yes.
So that's on. What else?
Well, Margot's got Money Troubles, which you guys will be reviewing on Pilot Plus, I believe.
Correct.
Yes.
That starts on Apple TV on Wednesday, the 15th of April, 2026. Yep. Beef, Season 2, which is a completely new story. So Beef is an anthology show.
It's an anthology.
In which there's a different beef that gets out of hand in each season. And this one is back on Netflix on Thursday. And this one stars Katie Spenny, Charles Melton, Oscar Isaac, not Oliver, his brother.
Oliver Isaac, yes.
And Carey Mulligan. That is a good
cast.
I have seen some of this and it's fascinating.
Is it stressful?
It's quite stressful.
Okay.
You'd cope. I think you'll be fine with it. Bergerac. I knew there was something that Kate hosted and it was definitely Bergerac.
It's on the 16th.
You and Drama on Thursday the 16th, exactly.
Yeah.
2025.
And then, of course, 26. The Murder Line, which is on basically at some point on some day.
Anyone started on Saturday and is on at some point throughout the week.
Yeah.
For sure. Yes. I think that's probably about it.
What is our pick of this week?
Big Mood.
Yeah. It kind of is, isn't it?
It has to be, surely.
Yeah.
Okay, right. That is it for this week's show. If you would like to get in contact with this show, the email address, of course, is postbag@pilottvpod.com. Yes, I am unduly proud of having sorted that out. You can follow us on the social medias at Pilot TV Pod, at Boyd Hilton, at Kay Ribeiro, at Steph Seelan, at James E. Dyer. These are all of our various handles. And of course, we are still soliciting 5-star reviews on whatever podcast platform is your favourite. Only 5 stars, though. We will accept nothing less.
Mm.
On next week's show, I don't care what you're doing because I'm not here.
That's the spirit, James.
What a bell end.
Yeah.
But there are some things going on next week, we should say. So on next week's show, we will very likely have Kush Jumbo and Peter Capaldi on talking about Criminal Record. If you are indeed reviewing Criminal Record next week, which I assume you will be doing. But there's quite a few other things, like there's Mint on BBC, there's Kevin on Prime, Unchosen on Netflix, as we've mentioned. What else is there? The new Stranger Things Tales from 85 spin-off will almost certainly be embargoed.
Animated.
It is animated, so sorry. And Half-Man comes next week to BBC One.
Well, it comes to iPlayer. Interesting. Interesting debate about what week we should do that.
Yeah. Oh, well, maybe we'll do it on the BBC One week.
Maybe.
Maybe we won't. Who knows? I don't care. I'm not going to be here. So you're on your own.
Unbelievable.
Not sure this is the right vibe, James.
It's fine. I'm checking out.
Shoddy behaviour.
Yeah.
He mentally checked out a long time ago.
I mean, that's true. Yeah. But I'm actually bodily, physically checking out this time. So,
you going camping with your mates?
I am not going to go camping. I might watch some more episodes of The Boyd?
Wow.
This is a joke.
Wow. It's a Freudian slip there, isn't it?
Boyd,
that's what it is. I might be watching The Boys, but I'll be thinking of you.
Thank you.
He's obsessed. He's just got some cameras set up in your place and he's just like going to be watching his screens.
It's probably just harking back to the days when I used to watch The Boys with Boyd's email address across the middle of it. Now I get my own, so it's slightly different. Anyway, on that note, it is goodbye from me, it is goodbye from the K, and it is goodbye from the Boyd. They will see you next week. I will see you the week after. Pilot out.